You know, so I think the worst shot in golf is you're trying to play safe and then you just blow it. It's like, God, there's nothing worse. Like, I am playing safe and I'm still messing up. It's like, I might as well just blast a driver. I'm the same result, right? At least something good would have happened, because a layup is never fun. So the best shots are the ones you pull off. So yeah, I think it's fun to just send it.
What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 9 of Coming Up Podcast. I'm Matt Schumacher. Our guest this week is Neil Schuster, one of the founding members of No Laying Up, which is essentially a golf content company that began as a text thread amongst friends and has since grown into a full-blown business, creating podcasts, video content, authentic merchandise, and the list goes on. If you're not familiar with No Laying Up, they are the disruptors in the golf content game. And they have stormed onto the scene and over the last few years risen into really the rising stars in the golf content and golf media communities. They're everywhere. They have grasped the attention of the biggest names in professional golf. And Neil has a really interesting path to becoming one of the co-founders of this mega brand that is now No Laying Up. And I think the biggest thing that I took away from our conversation is that Neil, throughout his life, and particularly his adult life, has intentionally made decisions to put himself out of his comfort zone, to be different, to challenge himself, to grow, to develop new skills. And it's that go for it, that full send approach that he was alluding to in the intro, talking about his golf game, but that's how he lives his life every day as well. And it's helped get him to where he is now with No Laying Up, having a blast with his four buddies and making a living doing it, creating content that he's passionate about. And that passion certainly comes through not only in the No Laying Up brand, but also in our conversation today. So without further ado, it's episode 9 of Coming Up Podcast with Neil Schuster. All right, we have Neil Schuster of No Laying Up, aka the Merch Czar, one of many nicknames, which we'll get to throughout the course of the show. But Neil, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us, my man.
Thank you for having me. I think you left out the nickname that ties me to this podcast, NG Shoe. It's a pleasure to talk to MD Shoe.
Oh yeah, two shoes in a pod.
Overload.
I want to jump right in, but first I got to ask you, you know, obviously No Laying Up, there's five of you who are part of the company. You're all avid golfers. Obviously you play a lot of golf. Are you any good?
I'd say, yeah, I'm good. If you compared me to the entire golf ecosystem, am I good enough to be doing it for a living? No, you know what I mean? And I guess I kind of am in a weird way. So I've always kind of said, out of the crew, I'm probably right in the middle. Solly's the best golfer. My brother and I are kind of, he's more consistent. I probably have a little bit more upside. And then DJ and Randy they have their days, but are a little bit more love of the game guys, but everybody's improved a ton. So the, you know, my handicap has dropped from when I started full time last year, it was an 8. Now it's down around a 4 or I think a 4.2 right now, but it was 3.5 for a while. So yeah, like good golfer. I've always been, my brother used to call me an athlete with a club. Like when I played junior golf. So I learned when I was young and I didn't really have the best mindset for the game. I used to get really pissed at myself. And that's not good in golf. So I ended up, you know, playing college football instead, where that maybe that rage helps you a little bit more. But I think I get a lot of, I don't know if it's shit, but I get a lot of people that are like, man, how are you not better with, you know, with the swing you have? Like I think sometimes I'm a look good in the uniform kind of guy on the golf course. But sometimes that doesn't translate into the score. It doesn't match up. But overall, yeah, I would say solid, strong to quite strong, to borrow a phrase from Greg Fokker.
But you know what?
looking the part is half the battle, man. Look good, feel good, play good.
That, I mean, listen, some people live by those words. Sometimes it's, you know, it can be a little frustrating, but that's kind of why I like playing golf, because it's I think for everybody, the unsolved lifetime riddle of sports. You know, you can't really, nobody can really crack the code. It's a really hard game. It's endlessly fascinating both to play and to, I guess, cover it and, you know, live it for, you know, for a job.
I heard, you know, you have a lot of nicknames with the No Laying Up crew. I heard that one of those is Icarito, after the Greek mythology character Icarus, who flew too close to the sun. And that nickname is in reference to how you play golf. Could you elaborate?
It's been in reference to how I finish rounds of golf. It's born from, we do a series called Strapped, which is basically my large slender associate, Big Randy, and I go play golf on a budget across America. So we've done six episodes. But the first one was in Iowa, and, you know, we basically have $500. We got to play three rounds of golf and stay and eat all on that budget. So kind of forces us out of our comfort zone. We've got to find, you know, good, cheap, affordable, interesting golf. So, you know, that's kind of where the made up stakes that we created for the show to keep us like on the mission of playing good public golf. But there's a wrinkle called the mega bonus, where if one of us, but neither of us have ever shot under par, and really, up until that point when we did the first one, had even really sniffed it. So we set up my brother, who's also an NLU member, Tron and Solly, as they're the C-suite, kind of like, you know, it's all kind of a bit, but they're like sending us out to play these rounds. And we're like, well, can we have a mega bonus if one of us breaks par, which basically doubled. We just get $500 bonus, double the budget to spend on whatever we want. And they're like, yeah, sure. And then of course, on the first trip in the third round, I'm 3 under par on, you know, 13. So it's like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm playing great. Like the mega bonus is very much in play. And then, you know, it's like quicksand. A quick double bogey, you know, the big right miss, kind of things seem to, it's hard to break through when you've never, you know, you're so low, you've never been there before. But I think I said it on camera, and the phrase comes from my buddy, Tommy Armour IV, a good friend of mine. Actually, his dad's a pro golfer, but the quote has nothing to do with golf. He just likes to, He likes to go hard when we, you know, in the past when we would go out at night, and he would say, like, I'm going to completely Icarus tonight. I'm just going to burn up. I'm going to fly too close to the sun. Like, I'm completely. And then he was Icarus for Halloween. And I don't know. I came up with Icarito because it just felt like, you know, the little Icarus. So that's kind of where the nickname came from. And I think it just stuck at this point, because it's happened now, I think, on 3 of the 6 seasons where I've kind of threatened to break par, and you know, usually a one errant shot dashes my hopes of doing so. But I'm confident I'm going to get there. I'm going to break through it. It's going to be a glorious day when I do.
Yeah, that's right. You just got to keep chipping away. Can't let exactly. The little mistakes turn into the big ones.
It's good content, right? It's not. It's what I think is good about it is I probably care a little too much. Like, I want to break par. I want to do it, and then. It's more than just breaking par at this point. Like, I don't know if the pressure's built, but now it's like I have to do it in one of these three rounds on camera. You know, it's almost like I do really well in that setting until it's like I've got it. And then I just, you know, make a poor club selection. I just try to do too much. You know, I try to force it, and then it all comes crashing down. But it'll make it that much sweeter when it happens. Funny is, both times it's happened, the errant shot has been more like – it happened in Baltimore on that season 5. And it was I was trying to like basically play it safe. And, you know, so I think the worst shot in golf is you're trying to play safe and then you just blow it. It's like, God, there's nothing worse. Like, I am playing safe and I'm still messing up. It's like, I might as well just blast a driver. I'm the same result, right? At least I was trying to, at least something good would have happened. Because a layup is never fun. So.
And hence the name No Laying Up, right? You're a go big or go home type of guy.
Yeah, you know, and I'd say that the name of the company has probably cost me a lot of strokes in my golf career at this point, just by being like, man, I can't lay up here. Like, I kind of like playing golf that way. Like, I like the best shots are the ones you pull off. So yeah, I think it's fun to just send it.
I love that. I love that. I want to get into that mentality a little bit more as it pertains to your life off the golf course. But before we get too much deeper in the show, a couple of times you've sort of referenced how, in a way, you're playing golf for a living insofar as like that's part of the brand that you guys have created, creating content in which you are playing golf. So for people who don't really know exactly what No Laying Up is, how would you describe the company?
Yeah, we sat around our table and discussed the elevator pitch a lot, trying to explain it to my parents' friends. It's a golf company, right? Easiest way to explain it would be a golf media company, but we're not trying to break news very often. It's more golf from the fans' perspective. So when we started it, it started just really as a text thread and a Twitter thread among friends. We kind of realized this is 2013, 2014. Like there's the golf content out there is pretty stodgy. It's either, you know, swing tips or pictures of Paulina Gretzky or, you know, game recaps. And they were written very, you know, straightforward. Nobody was really talking about golf the way we do as a group or in this, you know, these group text threads. So we kind of started putting that on Twitter. It got a little bit of traction and then we built a website. And I think our goal with the content that we put out is to, one, like I said, talk about it from the fans' perspective, but either, you know, inform, entertain, or engage people. And so we do that in a few ways. Like the podcast is what we're known for. We've got three different podcasts about different, you know, aspects of golf. And then we sell merchandise, which I think is one of the engagement pieces. Like how can we take this audience and kind of put fun stuff on shirts and make clothing that like we want to wear, like stuff in the golf space that like, hey, we're not seeing this. Like we want more shirts that look this way or fit like this. So kind of doing it our way across all the channels. And then the video one is the content that's probably growing the fastest. And we started doing that a couple years ago. And so we do a lot of pieces where we'll do, you know, course reviews, or we'll go to a professional tournament and kind of show like the history of the tournament, or a behind the scenes look of a player. Or it's the more, you know, I guess the series we do like Tour Sauce, it's kind of golf travel around the world. Like what does golf in Ireland look like? Or, you know, what would it look like if my buddies and I rented an RV and took it from LA to San Francisco? Like what courses would we play? So we try to ask ourselves questions like we want to know the answer to that we think are interesting. And then hopefully because we're engaged, like on the Strapped, for instance, like that's the budget golf series. It's like, you know, I love those trips. I think they're so fun. It's like an adventure. And so I think that comes through where it's like, we're clearly doing what we want to do. Last piece is like it, you know, there's a kind of a community aspect to it. I think, not a ton of young people play golf, so it can be a bit of a lonely interest in some ways. So we have a message board and we have events and ways to kind of help the NLU community and audience talk golf and meet up and do all kinds of stuff like that. So that's again where the engagement piece comes in. So that wasn't a short answer, but that I think that's the best way I could explain it.
And no, it was a great answer. And I want to go back a little bit and touch on something that you said early on in your answer, which was that No Laying Up was birthed out of a text thread or a Twitter thread with you and your brother and some of your friends. How did you go from conversation text thread to an idea to where you're at now, which is a thriving business with an incredible following on social media?
I mean, little by little. Honestly, like it started as a text thread mainly between those three guys. So they were friends from college. And then they took it to Twitter. And then I started obviously kind of following it and interacting with it. And then we all got on a call in, I think, November of 2013. And it was like, hey, we want to build a website. And I was working at a tech company in San Francisco. I was in sales. I wasn't coding, but they kind of were like, you work for a blog. Like, you know, Neil, like, how do we build a website? So I kind of, that day, I just started watching YouTube tutorials. And my good friend and roommate, Matt McClure, is a really good developer. And he was my roommate at the time. So I sat down with him and we just kind of put together a website, you know, just built it from scratch and then launched it January 1st of 2014. So that to me has always been kind of the day one of NLU. Like, I think a website kind of put it, you know, kind of put you on the map. It's the first time any, you know, money's invested in the company or whatever. Like, you gotta, you know, cost a few hundred bucks to slap together a logo and a website and everything. And then from there, it was kind of, we started writing weekly previews and writing them in like a fun voice and kind of, you know, breaking down each golf tournament throughout that first year. And nobody was reading it, but I think what kept it going was we were making each other laugh. So, you know, I'd write something and Randy thinks it's funny, which is kind of makes it worthwhile for me to keep doing it. So it was, and that kind of like, okay, now we want to make 100 t-shirts. So, all right, I'm going to go buy 100 t-shirts. Let's see if we can sell 100 t-shirts. Cool. We sold those 100. Let's buy another 100. Then let's buy 200. And oh man, I'm sick of shipping t-shirts out of my bedroom. Well, I need to look into fulfillment services. So then one thing leads into the next, like one challenge or problem, you kind of solve that. And then that creates another one. Then you solve that. As it grew, like we were all doing it on the side and we were all living across at that point, the world. Solly had moved to Amsterdam. He was an accountant. Randy was in Columbus. He was Ohio. He was a high school basketball coach. My brother was working at the Marriott doing like revenue stuff. And then I was out west in San Francisco. And it was one, like always on the side for the first 3 to 4 years. But I always felt like, at least for me, it was a worthy like hobby or a worthy, I felt like I was learning something when I was working on the NLU stuff because I was trying to figure things out. I was trying to, it was like a challenge, like, oh, let's see if I can sell these shirts or like, let's, you know, I'm going to write this golf piece. Let's see if people like it. And then, you know, I think you're doing it. We never really had the intention of like, oh, let's make this a business. It was more like, hey, maybe we'll get a couple free rounds of golf out of it. And, you know, also personally for me, it was a really good reason and continues to be to like keep in touch with my brother. So I was talking to him like, you know, 3-4 times a week, but like anytime I would call my brother, it'd be like, we have something to talk about, right? We talk about NLU stuff. So I think all of those things kind of led to us pushing through. I think there's a period where you'll see people like they'll start a food blog or something and they'll come out, you know, swinging on social media, like follow my food blog, do this. And then, you know, after like 3 months, it's like nobody's reading it. After that initial like bang and they kind of, it loses steam, they burn out. And I think we were able to push through that like 6 to 12 months, like valley of, you know, invisibility, I don't know. And because we had four of us. So when one of us would get burned out, somebody else would pick up the slack a little bit. It starts to compound on itself. The audience does. And then it becomes like, oh crap, now we got 10,000, you know, social media followers or whatever. Like this is getting real. So then again, it kind of just goes step by step like that.
So a couple things that you brought up. First of all, I love the story about kind of how it got started with the building of the website, and they looked to you to sort of bootstrap it. And luckily you were living with a website developer, which helped. But then the other part that I really liked was the fact that like through the first 3-6 months, you're not making any money, but you're making each other laugh. And there was four of you. So there was this passion and there was enough energy to kind of keep you guys going. At what point did you realize that this bootstrapped website could become an actual money-making venture that ultimately you would quit your job at Google for 3 years after it launched to go work full time?
I think there's a couple specific moments. When Callaway just said they wanted to sponsor the podcast was a big one. I mean, timing played a big role for us. So like, you know, we were lucky there wasn't a ton of fresh content around golf when we started, you know, tweeting and writing about it. So that was good, right place, right time. And then a year later when we started doing the podcast, same thing. Like there really wasn't any golf podcasting and podcasting starting to pick up steam. I think when, you know, we had a good relationship with Callaway, but they weren't sponsoring us. We kind of went to them and like, hey, would you guys be interested in sponsored podcasts? They were like, yes, absolutely. Like, you know, and we threw a number out and it was like way too low because they were immediately like, yes, done. Like, we were like, oh God, like we could have gotten a lot more money. You know what I mean? But that was when I was like, oh crap. Like now this is getting to be kind of real. I think the other moment was when Rory, Solly was at the Memorial and Rory came over in the middle of the round and started talking to him. It's like, you know, you're one of those no laying up guys, you know, like love what you're doing. Then he comes on the podcast. Then the merch operation for a while was like, we'd make funny shirts of like, you know, pros doing something like during a round, I'd get like a silhouette of it or whatever. And so we made one of Rory at the Ryder Cup when it was, I think this is 2016. And he's doing like the, I can't hear you after he makes like a 40 footer in his Patrick Reed match. And so we make this cool shirt with him, you know, doing that on it. And he sees it and he's like, I want like 50 of those, you know, send me 50 of them. So like Solly sends them my way. And I'm basically shipping him 50 shirts to this like random address in Ireland. And I was like, damn, this is, you know, like what a world. And then like 2 weeks later, we get like a cease and desist from his lawyers. Basically Nike got upset because they paid millions of dollars and we were using his likeness and we can't do that. But I was like, oh shit, we're on Nike's radar. Like that was like, oh man, this is getting real. So those are some of the moments I think that you know, kind of was like, oh, this is picking up steam. And then after we did a, you know, the Callaway sponsorship, and then the following year we did, that was when Solly went full time. He was coming back from Amsterdam. And so he was like, he didn't want to go work on his project in Chicago for KPMG. So he basically moved home and like went full time on it, which made sense because he hosts the main podcast and was kind of like, then from there, it was like my brother went full time, like I think 4 or 5 months later. And then Big Randy, I'm the youngest and I was working at Google at the time and I kind of liked what I was doing. And I think the fact that we staggered it over the course of a year and a half or so really made it viable. Like, you know, it made it gradual. So it wasn't just like, oh crap, now we have to make five times as much money immediately because there's five of us now full time. It was more like, cool, two of you are full time. And that led to like two times the revenue because two more heads are working on, you know, sponsorships and stuff. And then same thing when Randy went full time and then when DJ came on board. So I think one thing that I'm really proud of is how it's grown very naturally. Like we haven't raised money. There's no like, you know, there's not a ton of like, I have to hit this number or else like my investors are going to not give me any more money. It's very freeing to be able to make decisions based on like what's the right thing to do. What's the healthy thing for the business? Like, what do I want to work on? Stuff like that.
Yeah. That's so cool. I want to backpedal just a second because a few minutes ago, you were sort of talking about how when you were working full time, you know, you're at a tech company, tech blog, then you were at a software company, then you were at Google, and all the while you're working on No Laying Up on the side as a hobby, and then it starts turning into like a side business for you where some of your friends and your brother are working full time on it. Have you always had an entrepreneurial spirit kind of within you? Like, was starting your own company always something that's been in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I think I've had the itch for a while. A funny story, I was in college and I was between my junior and senior year and I was trying to get an internship to stay in New York so I could work out with the football team. And I didn't want to go into banking and, you know, the banks come up to Columbia and they're like, hey, like it gives you, there's a ton of FOMO. It's like, oh man, they kind of come on campus and make you feel like if you don't get one of these banking or consulting internships, you're doing it wrong. And I kind of like had made up my mind that I didn't want to do that, but there's not, if you want to go into media or if you want to go into something else, there's not these like structured programs, you know, a pipeline of internships. So I was hunting around and I got connected with a video game publishing company. So this guy, Alex Colmer, is the CEO. I go into this interview and I'm wearing like I probably look like Joe DiMaggio. I'm wearing a suit that's too big. And I'm like, you know, they're wearing like jeans and like a button down, you know, I'm like overdressed. And, you know, they'd never had an intern before. So we just had this weird like interview, I guess, like Jason and Alex, the two founders. And they're like, so like, what do you want to do? And me being like, you know, cocky, naive young guy was like, yeah, I want to work for myself as soon as possible. Like that's the quote. And so they were like, yeah, this guy's a tool. And they, you know, they were like, all right, cool, see you later. And I just like wouldn't take no for an answer. I kept, because it's my only option. So I just kept calling them. And I ended up just like showing up on the first day. Like, and they were like, oh, cool, I guess you can sit over there. And they just like never, like to hear Alex tell the story now, it's really funny. So I am doing a good job. And then I went, my first job out of college was at a startup in San Francisco, like a tech research company called GigaOM. and the name is as dumb as it sounds, but that was good experience. I was in sales there, and I think it, at a startup, like if you're in sales, like you get like really good experience. You get access to like the executives because you're really driving a business when it's young. And then that company folded, which is a long story. And then I went to work for another startup that was no good called Radius, which is no longer around. I worked there for like a year and a half, but I hated it there. And I probably spent most of my time working on NLU stuff at that point. And then I quit and I took like 3 months and I worked kind of on NLU exclusively in like late 2016. And then I got a job at Google, Google Ads, like account management team. And I almost looked at Google as been about 2.5 years there. It felt like grad school a little bit, like learning how the internet works, learning how to build ad campaigns, talking, you know, to a million different types of businesses, trying to set up like ad campaigns for lawyers, you know, e-commerce stuff. So that was great. And so I was able to manage doing it on the side for a long time. And then I guess the end of 2018, it started to feel like I was doing both jobs mediocre and I was ready to make a change.
I love that story about the video game company and the fact that you sort of just showed up on the first day, wouldn't take no for an answer, and got a desk. I mean, did you just make up stuff for yourself to do?
Yeah, I just didn't have any other choice. And that internship, I was just kind of like, yeah, showed up. They weren't going to pay me. You know, like I was like, hey guys, like I'm at like a, you know, minimum wage or something. They're like, that job has led to so many good friendships. And that's how kind of a network grows, I think.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I learned about you when I was kind of doing some digging is that you were a creative writing major at Columbia University and one of very few on the Columbia football team.
I was. Well,
what led you to that?
I didn't really want to do political science or sociology, which are the top two football majors because they're easier, right? And then economics, I'm not the biggest math guy. I took some economics classes and I'm glad I did. But I've always liked to write. I don't do it. It's a labor of love at this point. I don't do it as much as I should anymore, but I was a big journaler in high school. But I was cocky coming out of high school. You know, I was a big fish in a little pond from Atlanta, and I got to the big city and got punched in the mouth. But I absolutely loved creative writing at Columbia. I was a nonfiction focus, and it was basically like a lot of small classes, 12 to 15 people. You'd sit around at these big tables and like you had to turn in a, you know, 12 to 20 page paper twice a quarter. And it was like in most classes, you know, the teacher, the TA reads your paper. So if it stinks, you like don't really care. But like you, if you didn't come with some heat, like you would get basically three people would get, workshopped every week, you know, so those three and the class was like 3 hours long once a week. So everybody got an hour. So if you brought a piece of paper that stunk, you basically had to sit there while like your peers just told you how bad your writing was for an hour. So like, you know, I wrote one bad paper, I think my sophomore year, and I was like, I'm not doing that again. So I worked, it forced you to work really hard because you didn't want to embarrass yourself. And, you know, you get to read other papers and be like, man, these people are super talented and like get a window into who they are. And, you know, so I really liked that whole experience and vibe.
You just talked about kind of like moving to the big city, getting punched in the mouth, but also being in the creative writing major and sort of, you know, having your work critiqued really hard and also getting a chance to see just how competitive and talented that space was. How did those experiences kind of shape your mentality going forward and take that approach that has led you to where you are now with No Laying Up?
I think it's I've always had this I think it's like a visceral reaction to doing what everybody else is doing. In college, like that's why I think a lot of why I majored in creative writing was like it was different. Like nobody had done that. I was like, I want to do something different. I want to do sociology. Same thing with the, you know, going to work on Wall Street or be a consultant. I was like, that sounds like what everyone else is doing. Like I want to do something different. And so I think that's kind of been a constant. And then with the creative writing thing, it's like I remember being like, God, not, you know, when you do that, you put yourself out there, right? And it can be very uncomfortable, but it also turned out well for me. Like I enjoyed it, right? Or even going to Columbia in general from Atlanta, it was like, I want to do something different. I want to go up north. And then I get there, it's like, wow, this is tough. Like, this is a lot different than I thought it would be. But I'm pretty good at like sticking to it and, you know, coming out the other side and being like, I'm glad I did that. And so I think that's kind of fed into, you know, when I got a job, I moved to San Francisco out of college, and it was like tough for the first year, and then got my feet under me and, you know, kind of set myself up on a different track. And I think that I learned that creative writing major would have been a good example of that, of like, okay, you want to do something different. Well, that's cool, but it's not going to be easy. But if you work hard at it, like you'll probably enjoy it. Kind of, you know, a bit of it's kind of trusting like your instincts a little bit. But then the other thing is like doing it at the right time. So like I thought really seriously about after my second job at Radius when I quit, I almost did the NLU thing full time, but that would have been a mistake. It would have been too soon. I learned a ton at Google, you know, so I kind of made a commitment, like, let's get 2 years here at Google. Like, let's learn some stuff. Like, let's put your head down. And you kind of get up on the 2 years, you're like, oh man, like, yeah, I still feel like I want to leave, you know, and that's a hard decision to make because it's really comfy at, you know, in the big tech world. But it's also a bit of a, there's a lack of purpose a little bit, or like a lack of ownership, because it's such a big operation. And you just feel like a cog in the wheel. And I think that, going back to my first point about like doing something different, like I hate that feeling. I hate that feeling of like not making an impact. Like at NLU, it's like five of us, and we all like, if we're not pulling our weight, like that's a huge motivator of like, I don't want the other guys to feel like I'm not working hard. You know, Google's going to make $100 billion next quarter, like whether I grind for my ad clients or not. And that's not, you know, I can't do that at NLU. And I like that. That to me is motivating and kind of fulfilling.
The theme, it seems to me, of all these different decisions that you've made, you know, going from Atlanta to New York, choosing to do creative writing, choosing to do the internship at a place where they've never had an internship, flying across the country and going to San Francisco for your first job, all these things that took you out of your comfort zone, which kind of leads me to another question that I have, because when you step out of your comfort zone, you're bound to face challenges and failures, quote unquote. And one question I always ask everybody coming on this show is a failure that you've experienced that either you've learned a great deal from or that's propelled you forward. So if you think about, you know, failures in your past that have maybe propelled you forward, what stands out to you?
College football career was, I played a lot. And let me put it this way, I was the defensive MVP of a 1-9 football team, right? And like when I look back on my career, I'm like, God, I did not play good. Like I played good enough to play and to start, but I didn't, you know, like the seasons, we didn't win games, right? And that sucks. And it's like, why did that happen? Like, you know, I've asked myself that a lot, but it also instilled in me, it's like, you know what? It was still a worthwhile experience. Like 4 years, great friends, a ton of lessons learned. Like, I know that all sounds cliche, but I would change, if I could go back and change, I'd win more games, but I would play 100 times out of 100, I would still play all 4 years, even if we had lost every game. And that kind of goes to like the, you know, kind of sticking to it. Like I did NLU stuff for 4 years without making a dime, but I couldn't wait to work on it. You know, like I was trying to spend time on it. I loved doing it.
What differentiates No Laying Up from other companies like yours with golf podcasts, with merchandise, with blogs, things like that? How do you guys separate yourself in an industry which just continues to get flooded with new content and new podcasts and new Twitter handles and new websites?
It's relatable. I think it feels like what a lot of young golf fans are, you know, how they talk about the game. So that's helped us probably with the old guard and the, you know, the tours media outlets that have kind of lost touch with like what people actually think is interesting, funny, worth reading, stuff like that, or worth watching. And authentic, right? I think we've done a really good job of, like, I go back through our YouTube videos, or like we're redesigning our website right now, and I basically gone through every post, which I like forgot about half of them, but like pretty much every one of them, like I am either laughing or I'm like, oh man, we wrote about that. Like that's, you know what I mean? It's like stuff that I still find interesting or still think is like a good angle. And it's pretty clear that almost all of it is because somebody authentically wanted to write about that. And like, they wanted to write about it for free, right? For like the first 3 years, like someone wanted to spend their time. One of us wanted to spend our time covering that or thinking about that, writing about it, filming it, whatever, because we wanted to, because we thought it was interesting. And I just think there's such a lack of that in, you know, there's so much content coming at people all day long. Most of it is like, you know, the end goal is trying to sell somebody something. When my first job, I was guilty of this. I was selling like webinars to like tech companies, trying to get, you know, help their marketing team, like get CTOs on a webinar to talk about their cloud offering. Right. And it was like, I'd sell like a 3 webinars, you know, package. And it was like, that probably should have only been 1 webinar. Right. There's not 3 things that these guys can talk about that are interesting. And like, it shows, and like, nobody would show up to the webinar. Right. And I used to be, I'm young, I'm like 23. And I'm like, man, why isn't anybody showing up for this? And I'm like, well, listen, are you showing up? Like, do I find it interesting? Like, nah, I don't know what cloud computing is at the time. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have a concept of that, but I think so many people work on stuff or in industries that they maybe don't find personally interesting, that, you know, it, or work on like a content teams that are making content about stuff that they're not interested in, that they can't really, like, you know, how are you going to make relatable content if you can't relate to it? So I think the fact that all of us, like, at our core, like, want to do this, like golf, is like, well, that's, you know, requirement one. And requirement two is like, we haven't let it get out of control where like, oh God, we have to go do these videos because we need the money. And, you know, are we rich? Absolutely not. But like, I think there's something to be said for like, I get to use my time for the most part how I want to use my time, like day in, day out, which I think, you know, you could assign some wealth to that.
I think time wealth is something that's very, very, very underrated. And I think that's really cool that you guys all have that sense of, you know, being able to use your time how you want to use it for your passions. And then in turn, that has organically grown the business, because your passion comes through, the relatability and the content comes through, which I also think is pretty unique nowadays, especially when you look at the podcast industry in particular, which kind of leads me to one of my final couple of questions for you. You know, one thing that you've talked about a lot is the fact that NLU has grown organically. It's just been one domino after another. As far as the podcasts go, you guys have a few. They're wildly popular. The main one, No Laying Up, it's getting over 100,000 downloads per episode. How have you gone about growing your base of fans and listeners, and maintaining that level of listenership in a world where there are so many options?
I mean, I think it's still, authenticity still an answer to that question. Like, and I think consistency too. So we've gotten into a really good, I think, rhythm. Honestly, you know, through this quarantine, we've all been stuck at home. So the podcast has been very consistent. We don't have a lot. We've had to also exercise some creative muscles and different types of podcasts, like roundtables and history, like oral histories and stuff like that, which has been a ton of fun. But like, consistently, we release a video every Tuesday, right? And so once you start doing that kind of consistency, like, they get in the habit. We do a premiere on YouTube, for instance, every Tuesday at, you know, 8 p.m. to release whatever video we're releasing. And that becomes kind of, for those 2,000 to 3,000 people, like, that's a kind of appointment viewing, right? So it becomes a habit for us. It becomes a habit for the audience. I think another key, very valuable thing, I mentioned it earlier, but we have this message board called The Refuge. And it's just, you know, a bunch of golf sickos, mainly talking golf, but they're talking about everything. Think about like what people talk about after a round of golf, having a few beers. And it's become an instant feedback loop for not only the content, but the vibe or how people feel about certain things happening in golf or happening in the world. And, you know, it's like, I've even told sponsors of ours, like, you should go into this message board because people are talking about your clothing and how it fits and what they think of it. And it's just been extremely valuable for us to get like very candid feedback in this message board. Those would be the two things that have helped us, I think, remain both like true to what we want to do, but also like make sure like the people, that the growing audience, is getting what they need.
And I think having a message board for like organic conversation, the idea of, you know, four buddies after a round of golf, shooting the breeze with a couple of beers. That's an incredible idea and a simple idea that you've now executed, and it's become a huge part of the No Laying Up brand.
And I think part of what your brand is the fact that you guys are doing what you want when you want to do it. You're staying true to yourself. You're consistent. You're authentic. It's grown organically. All of those things go into making No Laying Up what it is. And I think it's also a big part of the draw for fans to No Laying Up, which kind of leads me to my last question for you, Neil, which is that, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who look at you or look at your friends, the guys who are involved in No Laying Up, and say, man, that's awesome. I would love to do what those guys are doing. Start a business with my friends, talking golf, creating content around this thing that we are all passionate about. And maybe it's not golf for somebody else. It's some kind of other passion, but turning your passion into a living. What advice would you give to somebody who wants to do that?
I'd say, like, what would you do? Like, you got to ask, I don't think enough people ask themselves the question of, like, what would you do if you had, if I gave you $10 million right now, or if I gave you like $50 million, what would you do with your time? You know, whatever the number is, that you don't have to work anymore at what you're doing. Like, money is now not the reason that you're going to work. And it's like, I think a lot of people, I know when I asked, I read like the 4-Hour Work Week. I've always found that book, that quote specifically from that book, useful. And I remember reading that, like, I don't know, when I was like 23 or 24. And I found that question like really hard to answer. And I think it is for a lot of people, which is why they like don't really ask themselves the question of like, if money wasn't a factor, what would you do with your time? And it's like, I would, you know, my answer to that question, I think at the time was like, I would want to travel. I'd want to play golf. I'd want to get, like, I love like getting massages, like foot massages. So I'd like probably get a lot of massages. And, you know, that was kind of like the list. And there might have been I'd have to go look, but there might be some other stuff on that list. And like, that's kind of, now I'm fast forward, it's kind of what I'm doing. Right. So the point being of that is like, and that might sound like I'm bragging. I don't mean it to be. It's more like it, you know, okay, like that's fine. Like whatever your list is, that's fine. And you might, I remember probably looking at Alice and be like, there's no way I can do that. Right. But then now you got the end zone. Like now you got to figure out how to get there. And I think another thing that served me well is like trying to acquire useful skills. So like, I'm not the podcast. Right. Like, that's not like I could host the NLU podcast, but like my value is I've got really good at, like, you know, some of the merchandise stuff, working on a Shopify website, running online ads, like things that are almost like nuts and bolts stuff. Like, figure out, like, can you become an expert in something? Like at Google, I was on the sales team for my first year and I didn't really enjoy it because Google ads kind of sell themselves. Like, it works, and most people that need to use Google ads are already using it. And I felt like I was saying the same thing 10 times a day on the phone. And there was another team that was the account management team, like the guys that build the account. So we'd sell, you know, Monster Energy on running a big YouTube campaign. Well, then it would get tossed over the fence to the guys that would build out the audiences and the targeting and, you know, run the videos and then optimize the campaigns. And they were kind of thought of internally as like the, you know, the junior team, like, oh yeah, let them deal with it. You know, like, they don't get paid as much, they don't get commission. But I looked at the teams like, damn, I want to know how it works. Like, I want to do that, because I felt like my goal at Google was to get promoted for sure. But like, I felt like, man, if I'm going to go try to do this NLU thing, I'd like to acquire some useful skills. And so I ended up switching that team for over a year, and it was a hard job. And, you know, you get shit on a lot because, like, a lot of times people oversell the deal and it doesn't work the way that people think it's going to work. But I built like 150 ad campaigns. And so I feel like that's a usable skill that now leaving, I can use both at NLU. And if NLU failed, like, I feel like I could go get a job at an ad agency, or I could start an ad agency business maybe, you know, because I know that's something I know. But it's kind of like picking something that you find interesting and then like, all right, I'm going to become the expert on this, or a relatively well-versed in it. And then you're going to be valuable to somebody. I think those, or, you know, another, I read something recently that I thought was interesting. Somebody was like, go to an influential person or your boss or decision maker and be like, what part of your job do you hate the most? And then basically offer to do that for them. right? Because it's probably something mindless task or something, but it's probably really important because like they have to do it and they don't like doing it. And then figure out like, cool, I'm going to do that really well, right? Because then it's like, again, you make yourself valuable. And then wherever you go, you know, like at the very least, okay, I can add value on this one thing or these two things.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that question. What would you do if you had the means to do whatever you wanted to do with your time, what would you do? And then the other part about going to your boss and asking, what's the thing that you hate doing? Okay, I'll do that, just to develop skills to lead you to where you really want to go. I think those are two really, really awesome pieces of advice. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
I think you have a really cool path and an applicable path in terms of the way you went about it and the mentality you have adopted over the years. And obviously, No Laying Up is an awesome company, just continues to grow. And you guys have a fan in me for sure.
Yeah, hopefully we don't screw it up.
Well, hey, if you that's do, you can fall back on all the skills that you've gained over there the course you of your time well, in the skills, business world.
I think, yeah, Shopify and Google Ads, those are the skills. I don't know my way around an Excel sheet to save my life. So there's some other ones.
That's all right, man. They call you the merch czar for a reason. You can fall back on those skills.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks, Matt. I enjoyed the conversation as well. Thanks for having me on.